Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Professor Barry Schuber, very good morning to you. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Howard. I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
Yep, excellent. Thank you. So there's a lot to talk about. Before we talk about this COVID medication, which I hope sounds promising, there's a lot of discussion, certainly with listeners, around whether people should be precluded from going to public places, places of worship, for example, if they haven't been vaccinated. Anthony Reich earlier told us that Israel has prevented, if you aren't fully vaccinated, you are not allowed to go to a shul service indoors. You can daven outdoors. That's a different story. What are your thoughts on that? One of our listeners, just before you answer, saying, why are we so obsessed with micromanaging people? If I'm fully vaccinated, what difference does it make if somebody else isn't?
Yeah, it's a very good question, a very complex question, a very challenging question. You know, where infectious disease and vaccinations are different to other protective things like, for example, seat belts and legislation for seat belts in motor cars, there you're really protecting only yourself. The problem with an infectious disease is that when you're vaccinated, you're doing it for two people. You're doing it for yourself. And I say two people, you're doing it for yourself and you're doing it for other people as well. The issue is that vaccinations are very, very good. They're excellent in reducing transmission. They're not 100%. But, and therefore we do need to kind of have a kind of situation where the community, a community, if it's a shul community or a soccer stadium and so on, where everybody is vaccinated to protect themselves and to protect others who may not be fully immune from the vaccination. So we're trying to get a situation where the whole population is protected, as it were, to the maximum extent. And this is why the kind of ethical issues and the legal issues around vaccination do start getting a bit complex, because again, it's a community protection as well as individual protection.
Yeah, it does, and it's so interesting because there's definitely this intersection between science, between what society demands and can tolerate, between protecting the medical community who have been placed under tremendous stress. So there are so many, and of course the economy. So there are so many intersection points here.
Yeah, you see, we have an instrument which can intervene in the transmission of an infectious agent. And this is why, for example, nobody's really balked at vaccination requirements for travel, because country can certainly impose that to prevent travelers introducing it. And it's not all that different a situation to imposing a vaccination requirement for people coming into a crowded situation where we know these viruses can be transmitted quite regularly.
Yeah, I always think about that. My first trip, I think it was to Zambia, before I went, I had to get a yellow fever injection. And it was as simple as that. I didn't raise a moral objection to it. If I wanted to go to Zambia, I needed my yellow fever injection.
Correct. And international regulations, health regulations, have been enforced for decades without problems. Mm.
It is a fascinating conversation. Tell me about this new COVID-19 pill. How far along the line is it? Is it all we hope it's going to be, do you think?
Yeah. Look, how there have been a lot of these so-called new pills, and many of them have kind of come with a lot of fanfare and media publicity, calling them game changers or turning points in the epidemic and so on. I think it's still early days. It's an exciting research thing. It's called Molnupiravir. And it's really a product of what a number of research institutions throughout the world and pharmaceutical industries throughout the world are doing, is that they are screening many of these antiviral drugs or potential antiviral drugs. In fact, this molnupiravir comes from the States, from it's from University of Maryland, Pennsylvania, and the NIH, the National Institute of Health. They screened about 18,000 potential chemicals, let's call them chemicals at this stage, for their antiviral activity, for any activity against specifically the coronavirus. And prior to this, of course, they came up with remdesivir. I don't know if you remember remdesivir.
Yes, sure.
There was also kind of touted as being a major significant breakthrough. Unfortunately, remdesivir hasn't really proven to be, it's been effective, but not all that effective. Certainly not what it was originally cracked up to be. Now, molnupiravir is a little bit different in that it actually targets two target sites in the virus replication, a little bit different to prior antiviral drugs. And the interim analysis of an fairly advanced clinical trial has shown quite significant results, reduction of hospitalization and deaths by about 50%. So that's quite significant. But I think it's still early days. Let's hope that it is going to be a significant therapeutic breakthrough. But at this stage, I wouldn't invest in it at this stage. Let's see what happens.
So at this stage, your most important aspects are non-pharmaceuticals prevention, the social distancing, the masks, things like that. It remains that, plus, of course, the pharmaceutical, which is the vaccinations.
Absolutely. It's a non-pharmaceutical invention we still, unfortunately, have to carry on because our present vaccinations are excellent. Our present generation are very good. And particularly in reducing severe disease, but not perfect in reducing the milder disease and transmission. We're not in our pre-COVID era at this stage.